and welcome to Hanalyze This, the self-help podcast that just can't help itself. I am one of two Hannahs, Hannah Hart, and today we're going to talk about playing. See, playing is learning. If it's true for kids, why wouldn't it be true for adults? So that's why today we're thrilled to have play expert Clay Drinko on the podcast to talk about how play can be so good for our brains, good for our mental health, and maybe make us better problem solvers. I'm sorry, I'm so excited. Let's just get right into it. Enjoy. Hello, Dr. Drinko. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Hannah. I am so, so excited about this. I have been a fan for a really, really, really long time. So I'm so into
this. Oh, hooray. I hope I don't phenomenally disappoint you. How should I refer to you, sir? Would you like me to refer to you as Clay, Dr. Drinko, Mr. Piddle paddle. I don't know.
I think Miss Dr. Drinko. No, I think
Miss Dr. Drinko.
I think Clay is totally fine. That's what my students call me. Clay is good.
Awesome. So are you a teacher, Clay?
I am. I teach middle school humanities.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes.
Oh my God, those monsters. Oh, that must be terrifying. Oh my God.
It's actually incredible. It's incredible. It's such a time of transformation for people, which is why it's so difficult. It's such a struggle because that's what transformation is. So I think that's why I'm drawn to it. Mm. Also because that was such a tough time in my life. Mm. I want to be the teacher that sort of brings out people's best and encourages them to be kind and connected. So I find it super fulfilling and rewarding. Challenging at times.
Although challenging. Middle school is such a significant time, and I think everyone is like, oh yeah, middle school. And it's just the weight of it, the heaviness, you know, it's really kind of like that transitioning out of little kid into younger person, child kid that everybody's mad at for some reason because you don't know how to function in the world yet. And then by high school, you're supposed to have figured it all out. I think the basic idea.
I think that it's kind of similar for me as toddlers. Like they want so much independence so quickly and they can't handle it, but you kind of have to negotiate with them.
Wow.
You know, here's the independence you can have. And it's a really interesting time where you want to be a grown up, but you don't have all the tools yet.
And teaching, I think you said history, right?
Yeah,
humanities.
History in ELA, yep.
Oh my God. I mean, wow, where do you begin to start to teach quote unquote history? It's like the importance of reflection. Like it's important to know your history, otherwise you're doomed to repeat it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also I'm interested in it. I didn't set out to be a history teacher. I came from a theater background and acting. So I was a theater teacher and an ELA teacher. And then the history part for me is I'm super into, and I didn't know I would be. I really focus on local history and civic engagement and current events so that we're learning.
Snaps are for you. Yes. This is not me testing my microphone. This is me giving snaps.
Because then it's not just reading from a textbook. It actually matters. Like we need to learn how the Constitution is set up. Because that matters to us today.
Yeah, it's broad strokes and the locality, right? So it's like, here you go. We live, here's how our country's set up, and here's how the state we live in is set up, and then here's how the county we live in is set up. Yeah. And then I think teaching the young people to really think about their environment as a participant in it is really important. So cheers to you. Is Drinko really your last name?
Drinko is really my last name. When I was an actor, I went and auditioned, and the person checking me in at the, you know, at the front desk was like, Clay Drinko, really good stage name.
Like, oh my God.
Thank you. But that's my real name. It's supposed to be like Austro-Hungarian. Allegedly.
So would you say Drinko?
Yeah. Like I come from like a Mikhail Drinko.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
It is. And then now you are Dr. Drinko. Are you a doctor? I have to stop now, otherwise I'll never stop. See, this is the importance of play.
Exactly.
But tell me, okay, so so you go by Dr. Drinko. Give me a little bit of background into how you've entered into the play space and how you came up with the idea for your book, Play Your Way Sane, which I have to get a copy of immediately, right now. That's, I'm like, Play Your Way Sane. Boy, would I!
Yeah, exactly. It came out... strangely, it wasn't written as a pandemic book, but it came out in that time. Mm. And it seems like it was written specifically for humans who have not had social interaction for a long time. It's sort of like a how to people book. But how did I go down this path? I stumbled onto improv when I was in college. I really fell in love with it as a socially anxious and generally anxious person. Because once I got really into it, I was not anxious when I was on stage. I was contributing. I was funnier than I was in real life. I was like the best version of myself that I could have imagined. And so I wanted to figure out, like, what was it about improv that allowed me to be so free and to not have that anxiety. And so when I went back to grad school to get my PhD in drama and theater studies.
Okay, PhD in drama and theater studies.
Yeah,
got it.
I'm not a medical doctor, nothing like that. When I went to do my dissertation, I wanted to answer that question of, like, what is it about improv? And I thought there would be tons written about how improv affects the mind, how improv affects the brain. And there was a bit about musical improv. But not theatrical improv or improv comedy. And so I wrote my dissertation about that question, connecting psychology and cognitive science with improv comedy. And people were really into that idea, and it became an academic book. So I wrote kind of the first academic book connecting improv comedy and psychology and cognitive science. And so I wrote that book. Here I am, like, I'm an expert. I did it. Like, now I know how to change my brain and not be anxious. Yay.
Who told you that?
Yeah, it didn't pan out. So I moved back to Manhattan and was not doing well, right? I was, like, not good with crowds, which is not good for someone who lives in New York City. I was just stressed out all the time. I was constantly just ruminating, constantly in my head, not at all enjoying the present moment. And so that's when I set out to sort of translate all of this academic work that I had done for me, so that I could walk out of my front door and not just, like, panic, you know, like a cold sweat of, like, all the people and how they're judging me and just, you know, totally not being in the moment. And so that's what Play Your Way Sane was. And I really wrote it for me. I know that might sound cheesy, but it was like, I need a tool so that I can feel this free improv, like, play, you know, spirit, but I can feel that every day. And so I sort of set out to do that, and I wrote it over a 7-year period and then sent it off to someone, and they were like, actually, this is great and we want to publish it. So that's that story.
That's that story. And then now you're like, yes. Yes, I'm a published author, Dr. Drinko, and yes, I teach these kids. And they have no idea. They don't even know what a great teacher they have, but they will reflect on it, I'm sure, in years to come. I would like to, before we take a break, I want to ask you a quick question, just because something that you said really struck me, which was that you felt more, you felt, as a self-described anxious person generally, that being on stage or being in theater or doing improv, you felt more free. And what do you think it is? Is it the permission? Is it the, like, what do you think the difference is between walking down the street and walking across a stage?
I think the main thing for me, the main takeaway, is that it's a shift in focus. So it gave me tools to shift away from focusing on myself to focusing really intensely and intently on other people. And so for me, acting and improv are these exercises, these experiments in how I can really, like, I have to focus on the other person.
Yeah.
And if I do that 100%, I cannot be thinking about, do I look stupid? Do I sound stupid? Are they judging me? So I think that's like the main ingredient, is this shift in focus.
Okay. Wow. Great. Let's bottle that and sell it. And we'll talk about that. But we'll get back to that right after this, and we'll hear more about the power of play and really what ways it can benefit your life after this quick break.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for joining us. If you're here, if you're just tuning in to this podcast, we're here with Dr. Clay Draco talking about the importance of play. Okay, why is play important?
Play is, like you said earlier, how we learn. And play offers
Let's start there. Why is play how we learn?
Yes.
I know I said it, but is it true?
It is true. I think with play, stakes are lower. Like, we are allowed to make mistakes. We are allowed to be in this experimental mindset and mess up and be okay. Like, if you think of animals playing, you know, they can maybe play fight and nip a little too hard. And then the other one, like, sort of nips back. And it's like, oh, lesson learned. Don't nip that hard, right? So the learning is sort of a part of the playing. And I think people have that same need, right? Like, I know if I am needing to learn something and the stakes feel really high, like if I don't get this right, my marriage could be over or my job could be on the line, right? If that's what it feels like,
yeah,
I am not going to be operating in a space where I can, like, be using the full capacity of my mind, right? Like, right. I am defensive. I'm like fight or flight. And so I think play offers us this lower stakes spirit and energy.
It's so interesting. As you say that, it strikes me, you know, I never did team sports or theater or, though I did sign up for an improv class. I'm signing up. I've got to.
Yes.
But it's it's very anxiety inducing. It's weird. I feel like I have the like opposite response in that walking around the world and everyday life feels like play. But then when it's like, okay, everybody, here's our structured play experience, I start to panic. I get really nervous. You know, like for instance, when we were doing, took this sketch writing class. I had the first like 3-hour session. And don't you hate when you're being taught by someone who's not a teacher and they don't have like a structure or anywhere and they're just talking for like, and you're just like, and we took a 45-minute break and I was like, this is $350. What is happening? Why is there 45 minutes of break? Anyway, that's my review. I'm changing classes. Anyway, but in that environment, we were doing like a who, what, where loosening up exercise, a conversation between two people, this, that, this, that. And then when it got to me, it was like the where moment. I just panicked and I totally blanked and I had absolutely no idea what to say.
Do you think you know where that comes from? Like, were you trying to be funny? Were you trying to be good? Or
I think I was just like, where? You know, and you're just like, excuse me. It just feels like I just avoid, like, creativity has always been such a subconscious experience for me that trying to shift it into the conscious focus is hard. Like, I'm very much the shower thoughts kind of, like, I get my best ideas while I'm washing dishes or in the shower or folding laundry. I'm really one of those secondary task relaxed people. And I think that I did not have any of my fidget tools with me at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was probably a factor, because I assumed, oh, this is going to be fun and interesting and entertaining. I don't need to play with my Slinky or fiddle with my Rubik's Cube, or I don't need to like do any of that. And I was wrong. No, I was wrong. I think just like my social interaction tools still applied.
That's really interesting, because I your access to that subconscious creativity is why a lot of people go into improv and take classes like that. So like whatever gives you access to that, you already have it. So you need to figure out what class is going to allow you to just go in and just do the thing. Like just be yourself. And if the where doesn't happen, truly who cares? Like there are no mistakes in improv.
Yeah.
And I think a good teacher will sort of guide the class based on, I don't know. I don't know this person. I don't know this school. I don't know. But you should, hopefully you'll find someone who will take people wherever they are and go at the pace that needs to happen.
Yeah. After the break, I unplugged my headphones so my wife could hear, because I wanted a secondary opinion, but I didn't say anything about it. I just did it. I was like, I'm gonna unplug my headphones, honey. You know, she was just reading a book on the bed. We were like, you know, we were on vacation. Well, we were just on vacation. But anyway, so I unplug my headphones. I do the remaining hour and a half of the class, and it stops. And I was like, I did it. I did a class. How great. And she was like, I don't know if that's for you. It's also just the heteronormative narrative, like we just don't have the same kind of humor. And even like the casual terminology used to describe people and genders and places and stuff. He used a phrase and everyone laughed, and I was like, that's disgusting to me.
So,
you know,
I will say, so I encounter this. I struggle with this as a gay man who talks a lot about improv comedy. Improv does have a straight white man, let's say problem, right?
Let's say problem. And I was being taught by one, and he used the term raw dogging.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So there,
it just took me completely out of it. And then it's like, where? And I'm like, France.
Yeah, because it's not only the words that are being said that are taking you out of it, but it's also, I think, the style of the teaching, right? Like that might work with a group of, you know, 22-year-old sort of hipstery white guys with that same kind of a humor. But I think that's why I'm really interested in the improv principles themselves. Mm. Is because if we look at those and we don't sort of, I don't know.
Social, like societal standards on top of them, but really just kind of like get in touch with our core humanity. Like it feels like it's so close. Like I feel like I'm so close to unlocking how to feel safe in these spaces, but I don't. And so it's like, it's kept me away from those play experiences.
Yeah. I think finding the right class is really, really important. And this was this also like online?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's another component. For me, I really, and I know a lot of people do improv classes online. I'm not saying don't do it. But for me personally, like there is something about a real face-to-face thing that shifts both when I'm talking to someone on the street and when I'm in an improv class. So that may be, like, I don't know of any studies on improv and its effects on like anxiety online.
Yeah.
Like virtually, but there are studies like when you're really in a room with someone. And think of it also as like exposure therapy.
That's what I'm thinking of it as, actually.
You know what
that's
I mean?
What I said, because, you know, my wife had said like, no, we're going to find you a different class. And she goes on Reddit. And ultimately she found a teacher that I think is more in line with my values. So I think that's going to be great. I still have to drop the other one. But I was like, I survived it. I was like, no. Honey, really, like, I'm so proud of myself. And she's like, no, I'm really proud of you too. And, you know, it doesn't have to be so painful. And I'm like, but it's exposure therapy, right? Like, I live alone. Like, I mean, I live and work by myself. Like, it's important for me to be exposed to these environments. She's like, sure. But like, but don't you want to like get to the skills and then you can do the, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, because honestly, and I'm so sorry, we're going to get back to you because you are the center of this.
No.
But I was like, she was like, I don't think you need to put yourself through that. And I was like, no, I survived it. I just wrote hell over and over again in my notebook. I was just like, hell, I'm in hell. And I was like, I wrote snooze really big. I was like, see, I did it. I got through it. I looked like I was really taking notes.
But even the taking notes thing, in an intro improv class, you know, when it works, you do feel really supported. You do feel like no matter what you do or say, like it is going to be fine. The stakes are super low. Like I lower my status when I'm teaching so that students are sort of elevated.
What do you mean by that?
In improv parlance, lowering status or raising your status isn't about your actual status, like in the economy or anything like that.
Okay.
It's about how you are coming across. So it has to do with body language. It has to do with like expertise, right? So if I'm like crossing my arms and sort of holding my chest out and my nose up and saying like, and saying like, I'm Dr. Drinko, which I never use Dr. Drinko, right? I'm like, I'm Clay. And I will sort of intentionally make some mistakes. I try to really be relaxed so that I might stumble with my words, or I notoriously forget what the names of the games are called, even the ones that I've invented. And that's like part of me lowering my status, where other people are like, wow, this guy's sort of fumbling and struggling a bit. I'm going to step up and I'll volunteer, you know, to move this thing along. And so you want to find maybe not a teacher that does things exactly like that, but there are all different ways for teachers to make students feel more comfortable. And I think in an intro improv class, that's it.
Like you wouldn't say, for instance, to ask someone to volunteer and then to volunteer what they wrote during the exercise and then immediately start the break. Yeah. No, Clay, I think you might be a good teacher, my friend, which makes me very curious about your book. Okay, so we must thank you so much for hearing me, and you're right, and there are good teachers out there, and I'm excited to continue to pursue this avenue, and I'm happy that I survived it, and I'm really curious to hear about more elements of play and to bring it back to what this podcast is about. You know,
but it is also about this. I write a lot in my book about making it not about me, right? Like when I'm interacting with someone, I put the focus on them so that they will talk, and they will talk until they are done talking, instead of what happens, I think, a lot in this day and age. Like I'm like 80 years old in this day and age, where people say like, oh, like I'm really tired, you know, my back's really sore today. And someone else says, well, last week I actually went to the doctor and they looked at me. Not about you. And I think we do things like that all the time. And so a big part of my book is like how to be human again, how to connect with people. And a lot of that is not thinking of myself as special, not thinking like what I say is the most important, but really trying to put as much of it on the other people as possible so that they feel open and want to talk and talk and talk. So that's sort of one of the aims of the book.
Almost a relief. Let's say you're someone who struggles with feeling special in your own life. And you should be special to you, you know?
Yes.
But
this,
it sounds like the play environment you're describing, or the improv environment, or et cetera, is an environment in which that reflex to put the focus on other people is appropriate. It's like the best use of that superpower. It's like, no, just really just deeply listen and be present. I think that was another thing that took me back was just like, it's just like 12 miserable faces, just unresponsive, staring into the, I mean, I'm just like, I don't know how you do it as a teacher, man. Cause I can't imagine, like, I don't know. It's just who I am. I reflect active listening. Like if someone's talking to me, I'm like, I am here. I am listening to you. And so seeing all the faces not listening was very distracting also. But then I was like, well, am I really listening? Cause I'm very distracted by all these miserable faces.
But I think that's my job as a teacher. Like if I see a room full of miserable people, I am stopping what I'm doing.
Yeah. And you're being like, okay, everybody.
Doing something else.
Yes. Yes.
Truly. I mean, it doesn't have to be miserable. Like I teach academic writing. I teach essay writing. That's not all I do, but that's a part of it. I want them to be able to write like a historian. Right. Right. And even that is a sort of joyful, interesting.
Exuberant.
There's struggle in it. People get really frustrated. But that reading the room thing is so, so important. Like there's no reason to have 12, like just really bummed out faces when you're supposed to be doing something that's so silly and joyful and playful.
And there is room in all education, I think, to bring that let's wake up into this experience type feeling. And would you say that play is an access point for that? Like a, hey, let's just get present.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there's two different ways to think about it. Some people use improv and play in like inserted into the day, right? Like let's do an improv game so that we can get more focused and then
could you
we'll
give a
go
quick example
it.
Of a game just for anybody who is unfamiliar with what games are in improv?
Yeah, like a warm-up game in improv that's the most famous probably. It's called Zip Zap Zop. There's regional differences, I'm sure, but it's just
you sort of plop plop, then dip dip dip.
In Minnesota, yes.
Yeah. So,
you just look at someone, you sort of like indicate with your hand, and you say zip, and then the person who gets zipped at, you know, points to someone else that says zap, zip zap zap zip zap zap, and it goes around and around, and it's truly just a way to look at each other, focus on each other, and the other sort of famous in improv circles warm-up game, I call it like you sees it. I don't know what it's really called, but you just walk around the room, you point at things, and you just say what they are, right? So, you know, you just say book, magazine, computer, three hole punch, water, right? And on and on and on.
Oh, it's kind of like a grounding exercise.
Exactly.
I was just saying that in therapy, like there's a way to get grounded using colors in the room. You know, it's like how many, like for instance, if I were to do it right now, if I felt like I was, if my hands were suddenly very far from my body, I could count the number of yellow objects in the room. And that would be a way of, and then if you don't feel present yet, you move on to, okay, what about the number of red objects in the room? What about the number of green objects? And then at some point you're like, oh no, I feel human again.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that is shifting your focus, which sort of shifts your brain to be operating in a way that feels more comfortable, right? It feels like, you know, it's the opposite of ruminating. It's the opposite of anxiety. It's the opposite of that sort of untethered feeling, because all of our conscious brains cannot do that many things. Really, they can do like a thing at a time. So if I'm grounding myself and looking at the colors, counting something, I cannot also be thinking, my therapist thinks I'm a whack job or whatever it is, right? I truly have, I can only do the one thing, and that's focus on the present moment. And so that is, there's so much overlap between therapeutic games and improv games and acting games, and because they do the same thing. They do a similar thing, and that's really shifting the focus. Yeah. So that's one approach. And then the other approach is to use improv principles like in the teaching itself, right? Like I think about how can I yes and with my students, which means like going along with what they're saying and then adding on, which sounds like maybe your teacher didn't do, right? Didn't go along with whatever your scene was and say like, okay, this is what you did, right? I saw this, really like acknowledging what's happening and then adding more onto that. So you can do the two things. You can add improv and play through exercises, or you can try to sort of walk the walk and use the improv principles in how you teach. So it's the what and the how.
Here's a question I have about yes anding. So if someone was like, I'm trying to yes and, this person shares in the group in a game or something like, oh, I hurt my back or I'm feeling sore today. And then another person says, well, I got blah, blah, blah last week. What's the difference between that and like a yes and response?
I mean, yes and, how I teach yes and in an improv class is through the exercise called yes and. And there's a lot of repetition in it, a lot of repeating what people are saying. So if you said to me, my back is really sore, I would say, yes, your back is really sore. And I heard you went to the doctor yesterday. And then you would say, yes, I went to the doctor, or no, yes, you heard
me
that
say,
I went to the doctor yesterday, and the doctor said it's chronic. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right?
But see, I think that is a really crucial aspect of yes and, the reflective listening that show, like, but in if your and can embody that, great. But like that, yes, this is what I'm hearing you say. Yeah. I heard you say this. Like that first part that like lives in parentheses is that focus, yeah. I think, that you're talking about. You
it's
know?
More, yeah, it's more about validating, right? It's like, this is your reality. I heard you say this thing. Mm. And of course, when once you get going and you get better at improv, you're not actually saying yes, repeat. And, but it helps you to get more into the spirit of what it's supposed to be instead of, you know, it's definitely not just saying yes to everything, right? Like my favorite example of that is if my scene partner says, you know, you're that serial killer. Like I might say like, me? No. I'm not the serial killer, right? So I'm saying no, but going along with their reality.
Oh, right? I love that. Yeah, yeah. No, that feel, and it feels very affirming, and it feels very fun, and it feels very silly. It's like when you're talking to kids, you know, and kids say something, or they're like, this is, you know, they just walk over and they make this statement about this toy, and it's so easy with children for some reason to engage in their reality or engage in their play, you know? And you're like, you know, they come over and they're like, bring over an airplane or bring over a robot. And they're like, this is the Destructor. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, hey there, Destructor, what do you do? And it's like, oh, I destruct. And it's like, oh, my goodness. You know, it's like, you know, and you're just there, you know?
I think it's such a good example of, and I have an exercise in the book that is in the mistakes, like being okay with mistakes. And it is watching kids just be themselves, right? And I think they also teach us yes and, like you said, really, really well, because they don't have that layer of like, no, right? Like this is the Destructor. There's nothing in their nature yet to say like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And so I think often no.
If they've been socialized.
Yeah.
If they're by themselves and they're the only kid in the house. I've met a couple toddlers that say no.
No, but not to that like imaginative play, right?
Yes, yeah.
And so I think often adults will say no to protect themselves from uncertainty, from the unknown.
Right, or take control of a reality that's not even theirs.
Right, which is a losing battle, right? Mm. We cannot take away uncertainty and we don't have control, right? And so I think looking at how little kids yes and is such a good way to help us know how to do it. Because you're right. Like my daughter all the time will say like, this book is about hamsters and these hamsters go to space, right? And she can go on and on and on, because you can also yes and yourself, right? You can also, she could say, actually, no, hamsters don't go to space.
But that what she would do now,
right? Game over. It truly shuts it all down. Yeah. And it also, you know, when you don't yes and, it's more likely to lead to conflict. That's why it's a rule in improv, because it avoids this, you know, this person said this, no, it's this, no, it's this, this back and forth conflict. Mm-hmm. Yes and just gets past it. And the goal is to then get to the what they say is the heart of the scene, right? Ha, 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 heart of the scene.
Drinko of the scene.
But the idea is if we get past it, you know, fighting about, you know, did you buy the blueberries, which doesn't matter, then we can get on to the relationship of the scene. And that's what people really want to watch, right? Of like, you know, oh, this couple is struggling. Are they going to get a divorce? Oh, they really love each other. But if they just say like, I bought the blueberries. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. Like, boring, right?
In that shared reality, the blueberries either are present in the house or they have been forgotten. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense. It's like, it's fair. I'm so excited. I believe we're going to try out some exercises from your book. Okay. You're going to share a couple of them.
Okay.
And we will get to that next thrilling part of the show right after this.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're back, you know, we're back talking with Clay Drinko. Clay, I just have to reflect, you're just such a natural and such a pro and like just, oh my gosh, your students are so lucky to have you as a teacher. It's like even as I interview a lot of people, like even in the, like doing an interview or having a conversation with someone, you can tell when they're participating or when they're just receiving, like waiting for more questions kind of thing. And so I just wanted to say that, like, I really think you're just such a natural and maybe you should have a podcast someday.
Oh, you know? Thank you. It's interesting that you say that, not the podcast part, but the natural part, because it's not, right? I think that's for me, the interesting part is like, I don't have that ability that you have to just interact with people and feel not in my head. And so this all comes from all that work that I've been doing over years and years to like shift my focus to the other people so that I can be myself, which is so interesting, I think.
I think so too. No, it's really wonderful. Something that I'm reminded of in terms of the yes and conversation we just had is Twitch and my like chat space and my chat community, because I realized that one of the reasons it's so fun is that everyone's doing bits. Just everyone's just in the chat doing bits, making jokes, la la la. And like, you know, I'm like doing the show part, but everyone's getting to communicate and participate and one up and like, or not one up, but like just riff with each other, you know? Yeah. And I feel like for people who maybe don't have access to other like-minded community members, especially people in the queer spaces, being a part of an online community, it kind of gives you that like socialization too, you know? And for those listening, I'm typing and shimmying my shoulders as if I'm saying some quippy reply, you know? But it's all very positive. It is yes anding, you know? So it's fun.
That's great. Yeah, because I do think it's important to have a community where you know that everyone has your back. Like you know, because to be in the queer community, like we do have our own sort of language, right? Yeah. Like I face that in the...
Our understanding of human rights.
If you will.
Like people's ownership over their own bodies or whatever. Yeah. Like you can't really be a queer person and haven't done any therapy so that you can survive, you know? Yeah. But then it's like you go into straight spaces and you're like, oh my God, why would you say that? You know?
Yeah. So it is like this... I do think it's important to have those spaces where you don't have to be self-conscious, right? You can just riff because, again, you can't do the two things at once, right? You can't worry about, you know, am I safe here? Like, do people not like people like me in this space? Like, you can't possibly have that kind of stress and also be like, I'm so clever, witty thing. You know, like you truly have to create a safe space, whether it's a, you know, an in-person improv class or one of my classes or, you know, on Twitch, you said?
Twitch. It's fascinating. It's like a live show platform. It's very fun.
Oh, that's so fun. I'm writing it down because I'm of a certain age.
Of a certain age. Oh, you can do anything on there. Sometimes I garden. Sometimes I cook. Sometimes I play games. Sometimes I cry. Sometimes it's too late in the night and then I delete it the next day. You know, sometimes it's like, let's go there. I have my ukulele. Let's sing. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Does it skew younger? I'm always trying to stay hip with the...
Twitch is primarily like a gaming platform. So you've probably heard it the most as gaming platform.
Okay.
But it is kind of expanding in terms of how people use it. I think of it more as just a live performance platform with really excellent audience participation built in. So it's twitch.tv. And if you're curious about me, it's twitch.tv/thisheartomine.
Got it.
I think next year I'll just change it to Hannah Hart, though. I mean... Gotta make the bucks. Gotta make those bucks. Okay, speaking of making bucks, let's motivate people to check out your book. Clay, if you are comfortable either reading a portion of your book or doing a game from your book, I'd love to like see how you wrote it to be used for yourself or others.
Sure. I think actually people don't ask me to read. Can I just read like a little of the intro?
Yes, I would. That would be a dream. I would love to hear that.
All right, because it does have a...
You're like, well, I wrote down what this is in a really great way, and I agonized over it, and I edited it. Yeah, no, I know. It's so... Please read.
But it's... I think because people see that I have an academic book, see that I have a PhD, I think they don't understand how I've written this, and it truly... I wrote it to be, like, in the improv spirit, where, like, it is me riffing. Somehow Kim Kardashian comes up a lot. There's weird poop stories. Like, it just goes all wrong, but then it all connects at the end, which is improv. And so yeah. I kept all that in there.
Yay!
So I'll read a little bit. I've got a lot of garbage to worry about. Like many people, I'm constantly thinking about how I could have said something better, how I could have worked harder or seemed smarter. I spend hours playing out pointless hypotheticals, like what my house will be worth in 50 years if the real estate market appreciates 8% annually for the rest of my life. Of course, I plan on moving in less than 10 years, and the market is a fickle mistress, so these what-if scenarios probably aren't the best use of my time. In fact, all this garbage that weighs me down, this gray water in my gray matter, is a waste of time. It gets in my way. It prevents me from making connections with others, enjoying the moment, and effectively solving problems. It also drives my therapist crazy. I mean, I'm charming and all, but if you sat through my 10th hypothetical in a one-hour session, you'd be just as fed up as my friend. So that's the intro. It sort of sets the stage for, like, why did I write this? And
well,
it
shows the preoccupation. It shows the temptation of worry. It shows that, you know, even going as someone who has sought self-help tools and gone to therapy, even then you are still subject to these hypotheticals.
And I wanted to make it very clear that this is not, it is in the self-help genre. It's in that lane, but this is not a book that promises, if you read it from cover to cover, you're fixed. Like, everything's perfect. It truly is something that I still do every day. Like, I still do these exercises as a way to shift my focus, be more present, be more connected. And I still struggle. Like, there are moments, you know, where I'm with the kids all day and I'm like, I have had it, and it gets a little mind numbing. And so I'm not, you know, my best self. I'm not like,
but who,
you know,
how it, could you be? You're not a rogue. You're not.
Exactly.
If there's anything I've ever wanted people to get from this podcast or making this, it's the understanding that self-help is kind of like a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the way I choose to interact in the world is to have the tools that I need to stay present. And by staying present in my life, I build a better life around me. And a better life for those who are in my community or those who are around me as well, right?
Yeah.
And there was something that you said, they're exercises. People accept that for athletes to maintain their mobility and strength and training, that they have to do continual conditioning, that they have to stretch, that they have to warm up, that they have to exercise every day so that they can keep their body where they want it for their life. And the journey of mental health and mental wellness and being present, for some, it is continual training. You are becoming an athlete to keep yourself going, you know?
Yeah, it's like my version of Sudoku to keep my mind humming, right?
Yeah.
Because with therapy, I'd have these great sessions. I'm like, yes, I got it figured out. I'm feeling good. And then it's 7 full days before I have therapy again. Even if I get a little homework, like it's usually not something very fun. It's usually something that it's going to make me focus on terrible thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted this to be like, what do you do when you are not in therapy? It's not a replacement. It's not instead of therapy. It is those day-to-day things when you catch yourself like, oh, wow, I am doing weird math in my brain of like, what if I win the lottery? How much money? Like, what? How can I shift and pay attention to this person? Or how can I, wow, I'm complaining a lot. Like there's game or, you know, games or exercises in the book to help you be more positive. Mm. Not in the fake way of like everything's perfect, but like sometimes like complaining is not a really effective communication tool, right?
So maybe it's not even, it's not like the strength training. It's more like the ice bath. It's more like the jacuzzi after. It's like, you've done all this work. Like, look at you. You went to therapy today. Or look at you. You're doing this exercise. Or you had 7 hours with the kids. Or la, la, la. You are entitled to some rest, relief, and relaxation. And playing is an access point to get there.
It might, for me, it's more like the sugar that helps the medicine go down. It's stuff that I should be doing all the time, right? But making it fun helps me to actually do it.
Right.
And so I have in there, like...
do you have another example of that we could share?
Yeah, there's a game called Surfer Dude.
Sweet.
Where a lot of these are really brief, really simple. And this one, when I feel myself being like stressed out, I just throw in some like mans or dudes, and it is just a way to almost trick myself, dude, that like the stakes are low, man.
Totally.
And just doing that. And there's another one that's called Sense Memory Cigarettes. And
where you're just like,
yeah, you truly just
another
like,
day in the life for me.
Yeah. And I'll do it where nobody can see it. Right. And I kind of will just be like, hold it in to really get that fake nicotine in. You can do this. I've added on, since I wrote the book, to like pot. We can do like sense memory, like pot, joint. Which really do a little joint. And it truly is just a way to like stop the momentum, stop the sort of spiraling, and just start again, right?
Wow.
And so it's some of them are just little tricks like that.
Ah, I love it. I love it. Well, I mean... Dr. Drinko, sir, Professor Drinko of it all, truly this has been a pleasure. I am so glad that you have gone towards this as work in your life and that you have taken the tools that you've used for yourself and shared it in this way with others. It's a lot of work to write a book, and I'm just so proud of you for doing it, because I think that if someone's lucky enough to get it, if somebody reaches out and grabs it, they're going to benefit from it. So speaking of, where can people find your book, Play Your Way Sane, and where can they find more time with you?
Sure. PlayYourWaySane.com is my website. It's available wherever books are sold. And I'm mainly on, for social media, I'm mainly just on Instagram these days. And that's great. Just Play Your Way Sane.
Play Your Way Sane on Instagram.
Yes. And I also have a monthly newsletter. So if people go to playyourwaysane.com, you can subscribe and get 3 of these games for free. Just see what they are. And then I send out a monthly, I'm always coming up with new games, new ways to sort of boost my mental health and shift my focus. So I give like a free game every month and just a little blurb about, I also write for Psychology Today. So like I'll tell people this is my latest article, or you can see me on this podcast, or these are the books that I'm really excited about. And it's just once a month. No spam.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So that's playyourwaysane.com. Or if you're more of an Instagram user, you can go to instagram.com/playyourwaysane. And Dr. Clay Drinko, I have to say that we started this off with you telling me that you were a fan of me. Well, in fact, now, sir, I have become a fan of you.
My, how the tables have turned.
My, how the tables have turned. This has been an episode of Analyze This. If you enjoyed this podcast, that's so great. We have an entire backlog of fantastic episodes. So if it's your first time here, go ahead and start from another episode that you might really enjoy. You can find me all across the internet at Harto, H-A-R-T-O, except for Twitch, which is twitch.tv/thisHartoMine. I should fix that. Anyway, everybody, thank you again, Clay, and thank you for listening, earbuds. Have a great day. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you, Hannah.